CBSI and the World. I'm John Batchelor with Captain Jerry Hendricks, United States Navy retired aviator, the author most recently of To Provide and Maintain a Navy, Why Naval Primacy is America's First Best Strategy. In the Atlantic Monthly, now on the stands, Jerry's written America's Future is at Sea. And controversially and excitingly, he makes the very careful point that Sea Powers is Costco. Sea Powers is Kmart. Sea Powers is Amazon. How so, Captain Hendricks?
Well, John, if you really think about the big box stores that have increasingly dominated our economy, whether it's Walmart that sort of led the way, or Lowe's, or Home Depot, or BJ's Wholesale Club, or Costco, these are all based upon big box commerce. So all those vast container ships loaded with hundreds of containers that come from Asia or for Africa or even our European allies, those all come to us and make it to these big box stores via the sea. I mean, 90% of our trade by value, 80% by volume, all comes by sea. And so we all depend on the sea. The sea is part and parcel of our modern economy. And yet for far too long now, we've just assumed that this is a natural state, that it is a condition. This idea of the free sea with free trade is a natural condition of the world, when in fact, that's a relatively new phenomenon. Up until the end of World War II, in fact, the seas were contested. And no one would have built a large ship like the great-sized ocean liners or the huge super tankers or the huge container ships that we have today. No one would have built those in the past when the sea was contested, because no one could have afforded to put that much value into one asset and set it upon the world's oceans in a place where it could either be sunk by an enemy power or hijacked by a pirate. And so what we see in the modern economy and the tremendous exponential growth in the modern economy that we've seen since 1945 has largely been guaranteed and backed by the United States Navy, which has cleared the seas of trouble and established this new condition of the free sea. It was a dream that we once had as mankind, but it's a dream that's been realized. And one of my main concerns that I raise in the essay is that the dream can no longer be assumed, because we have not been working hard enough at the dream to maintain and uphold it and protect it over the last couple decades.
Great Britain, the Dutch Republic, Venice, and Carthage, you list in your essay at the Atlantic, are sea powers. The U.S. is a sea power if it says so, if it wants to. Jerry, what's the history of the U.S. seeing itself as a sea power? This includes the very famous Professor Mahan. What did he write? Why is it relevant today?
Well, you know, John, we began as a sea power. We were 13 colonies, became 13 states looking eastward across the Atlantic Ocean. Virtually every state in the Union was dependent upon trade, whether it was the southern plantation states who needed to ship their goods and their cotton, whether it was the northern mercantilist states that wanted to import finished goods and also export their own goods. The fact is we began as a sea power. We were tied to the sea, and that is expressed in the Constitution, wherein Article 1, Section 8 says that we shall provide and maintain a navy. Well, the Army was viewed as conditional, almost episodic. The fact is we structured ourselves as a sea power. George Washington's first foreign policy was expressly that of a sea power, and Washington built that first strong navy with the original six frigates to enforce that foreign policy. But as we turned and began to settle the continent and spread outward, we became more focused on the continent and continental settlement and continental power issues. And we sort of gotten caught up in the continental viewpoint. Well, now that the continent has been settled for many generations now, and we find ourselves now sort of looking outward across the world, my point is, and it's the point that Mahan made in 1890 when he wrote in the Atlantic, that, hey, we are a sea power, and we need to get back to that identity and understand that our power, our economic power, and even our military situation, our security, derives from where we sit in the world, as a continent, with these oceans separating us from the Eurasian landmass. We need to pay attention to that. And that's why I wanted to write this essay, sort of as a clarion call to bring us back to that sea power mentality and make us invest again in that philosophy of sea power.
My memory is that it was called Task Force 58. That was the 17 aircraft carrier battle groups that surrounded Japan and destroyed the Imperial Japanese Navy and ended the Second World War. And your essay makes it clear that the Navy has been shrinking ever since. Was there one decision made, we don't need the Navy anymore, or are these a series of decisions over many administrations?
Well, John, it's been a constant fall off. We went from 6,700 ships in the Navy in August of 1945. We quickly shrank down to 1,000 because there was just no need to keep that large wartime Navy around. And we maintained 1,000 ships in the Navy until the late 1960s when Vietnam began to consume more and more of our military budget. And then we were down to the low 500s by the time we got to the end of the Carter administration, which was why Ronald Reagan ran on a policy of growing the Navy to 600 ships. So we bumped up to nearly 600. We won the Cold War, but then both parties, so George H.W. Bush and then followed by Bill Clinton, put in place a series of peace dividends that began to cut the Navy. And so we went from 592 ships at the end of the Cold War. We dropped almost 100 ships in the first year after the Cold War. Then we just incrementally, until we finally got down to 271 ships, or the nadir of the Navy, during the Obama administration. And we've been sort of slowly building back up. We've had conversations about needing a 313 ship, and then a 350 ship, then a 355 ship Navy. And we've had that as a goal, but quite frankly, we haven't had the industrial base or the national will to really build that 355 ship Navy, even though that is the law. The Congress has actually passed a congressional bill that says the law of the land is we need a 355 ship fleet, but we have yet to really invest sufficiently to get there.
I grew up on the East Coast of the United States, and the U.S. Navy is obvious to me, being someone who's moved his whole life between Philadelphia, the birth of the Navy, and now the Connecticut shore. You're a child of the Midwest. Do the people in the Midwest understand that the Navy is our strength?
I think that that's actually who I'm writing this essay to. I'm writing this as an essay to my fellow Midwesterners, the people that live not only in the Northwest Territory, as we used to say, but across the Plain States and the Rocky Mountains. You know, Theodore Roosevelt began to name Navy ships after internal states of the Union because he needed to tie the Navy to the people in the center of the country, not just on the coasts. And so making people aware, that's why I make the statement in this, that if you like Walmart, then you must really love the U.S. Navy, because it's the Navy that brings Walmart to you. We need to make that tie to what the product that the Navy produces, this free sea, we need to make that real to the American people. And so this essay for me was actually an essay to the people back home.
And Jerry, in making that case, it's not a political case. It's an economic case, correct? You're saying to America, in order to maintain and grow our prosperity for the future, for our children, for our great-grandchildren, we need a strong U.S. Navy. Is that all correct?
That is correct. And we need a maritime economy. You know, the one thing about it is we're beginning to actually export manufactured goods from this country again. We're exporting liquefied natural gas and oil to Europe. But that those products and that energy is traveling on foreign-made hulls. So we're actually passing up a vital aspect of our economic growth. We are not making a profit off the products we make. We are actually shipping them on foreign-built ships and on foreign flag crews. They are profiting from our hard work. And again, it's all a part of a whole. We need a maritime economy in this country again, and for the American people to understand that there are good blue-collar jobs to be had in shipyards, civilian shipyards, as well as military shipyards. And this is something that both parties can get behind and support.
Captain Jerry Hendricks, United States Navy retired aviator, writing at The Atlantic, America's Future is at Sea. What is to be done when we come back? I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.